Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna add you to my roster. In Roto, replacing Gio Soto, Giolito, and Brito, baby, where my fab go? You're the Florida Keys. There's a place in Miami that's where you wanna be to get ahead of your league. If you put Posey at C, he'll help in points or OBP. Heath will approve cause he's under 30, cause Heath's an ageist on the podcast. Mazzara and Parra project to Amiwara, Herrera, Cabrera. Don't let the bait that scare ya, Machado or Bono. Ooh, or Nolan Guarantee.
Teach you how to win Roto. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alonzarek Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Hey, let's talk some fantasy baseball. Welcome to the show, everybody. Fantasy baseball today. A little bit later in the week than we like. Sorry about that. Scott White was sick yesterday.
What?
What's up with that, Scott White?
You were talking about how you're sick today.
Yeah,
at least I had the decency not to show up and infect everybody else.
I gotta get this podcast done, you know? People need the podcast.
You're actually here in person, which
And
what's strange is this is the first time I've seen you in person in months. And you're wearing the exact same shirt as me. Not just a plain brown polo, but same brand, same buttons.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's the exact same shirt.
Old Navy. Scott and I like cheap shirts. This was like $10. I've had it for like 5 years.
Yeah, yours is more faded than mine. So, you know,
we're not
quite twins, but.
I love Old Navy.
Of course.
What a place. What a place. Hey, today we're looking at rounds 1 and 2. Scott has determined his top 24 for next year. I can tell it's points league, not Roto, right?
It's just really like a palate cleanser.
Okay.
It's for both.
Okay.
It's going to be neither when all said and done. It's kind of a blending of a both that doesn't really work except as a palate cleanser.
What's the one that you just like, I can't believe he's in my top 24. Or she, if I don't know, I didn't mean to be.
I don't think there is one.
No? Okay.
There were a couple. This is because I initially did this process, I think, in late August, and there have been some changes from that version. So there was an article that came out in late August, a couple changes since then, and there were a couple players maybe in that initial top 24 that gave me an icky feeling, but they have since been purged.
You know, I think the last five are pretty really kind of guys. Like,
all right.
I guess like it's probably up to me to think of somebody better. Well, but hey, we'll get to that. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We do have plenty of your emails to read. Let's talk a little postseason baseball. We got Game 5 tonight, Kershaw and Rich Hill. Rich Hill pitching on 3 days rest. I said Kershaw, I meant Scherzer. Scherzer and Rich Hill with Rich Hill pitching on 3 days rest. You'll probably see some Julio Urias. I'm going to guess most people listen to this after the game. So quick prediction. I will say the Nationals win it. I think you're going to get a good one from Scherzer tonight. I think they win.
I agree. He acknowledged it's the biggest game of his career, and he seems like the kind of pitcher who will rise to that moment. Not that he really needs to do any rising. Best pitcher in the NL this year. Well, in baseball,
season
probably.
Long. Season yeah. long. Yeah. Right. And Hill had a great year, too. And exciting series. And how about my World Series pick? I was sure of it. The Red Sox were going to win the World Series.
You were...
Didn't win a game.
Surely wrong, yes.
Had as many postseason wins as the Braves.
That's true. Yeah, swept out. So, and you were a little overly certain because you were saying there's no way you can pick the Cubs over the Red Sox, which was just
that was a ridiculous opinion. That was me just having fun with it. You could have picked anyone over the Red Sox. I'm a little surprised about the Indians. I mean, how does Josh Tomlin go into Fenway Park? And it's not like he pitched great or anything, but I would have expected him to really get hammered. Trevor Bauer somehow managed to get through that first game. You know, the thing is, what you got to remember, I guess, and it's not that I forgot this, but maybe I just didn't think about it. The managers are so aggressive with their bullpens. So Andrew Miller was great in that series. And
the
last inning and a half of game three was really exciting. I mean, Allen was had one pitch, couldn't throw his breaking pitch, was nothing but fastballs basically, and somehow got by. And yeah,
we'll see if this approach carries the Indians through the playoffs. Obviously, Allen showed his vulnerability there in the ninth inning of the deciding game, and
a little bit, but also he came in the eighth.
Well, I mean, it there's no question Andrew Miller's the better pitcher, yeah. And that was obviously a dilemma in fantasy after the trade that sent Miller to the Indians. How long would they stick with Allen in the ninth? It turned out to be rest of the season, still going on in the playoffs, and it's a big reason they won that first series using Andrew Miller the way they do. So if that carries them through the playoffs, you know, as much as of the copy catting as we saw with the bullpens, the Royals bullpen usage the last couple years, copycatty. Did I say that right? You know what I meant.
I do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we get more copycats. I mean, it would be a bad news in fantasy if we could no longer trust teams to reserve their best reliever for the ninth inning, but that's something that Sabermetrics community's been pushing for a while now, and
man,
I think this is the clearest case of it working.
I guess, but it's not like Allen's bad. First of all, he's a very good closer. He's no Andrew Miller.
He's a very good reliever. He's kind of a mid-tier closer, I would say.
Okay. I mean, the Giants would kill to have him, right?
that's for sure.
That's
yes.
for sure. Some other things I wanted to talk about. Zach Britton. This was so long ago, but he didn't pitch Zach Britton in that game. There's no excusing it. I'm sorry. That was just silly.
Yeah, I thought Brad Brock and Darren O'Day going to them was fine if you really wanted to save Britton for that save situation, because those two had been so dominant all year. I mean, if they lose with them, I think it's defensible. But once Ubaldo Jimenez was in there, and once Ubaldo Jimenez had put runners on base and you needed a double play, and you have the best ground ball pitcher around, who also happens to be maybe the best pitcher around,
yeah,
sitting there, that was not a good move.
And I was very surprised that the Blue Jays just did away with the Rangers sweeping them. But it wasn't just, it was Brian Dunsing. That's who it was. They put in Dunsing and then Jimenez before Britton. So that was crazy. Other postseason storylines, the Giants obviously need a closer. That could be a very good, if they go out and get a closer, that could be, or do you think they do someone internal like Law?
Oh, I think they're going to bring somebody in, especially since that was their, what ultimately doomed them. And there are some big, I was just ranking relievers earlier today. Big free agents at that position this year. The best two probably, Kenley Jansen and Aroldis Chapman, and then Mark Melancon as well. So you're talking about three top 10 closers for sure. The Giants always have the resources to sign a free agent if they want to badly enough.
Yeah, that's a good spot for a closer.
Yeah,
that's a lot of save opportunities there. David Price stinks in the playoffs. Clayton Kershaw kind of stinks in the playoffs. He was game four, he pitched very well. But game one, he, you know, five innings, eight hits, three runs. It's no good.
Yeah.
And the Price, I mean, geez, five runs in three and a third. Got hammered at Cleveland.
Yeah.
This is a thing. This is a lot of postseason starts.
It is. In Kershaw's case, there and this happened, I think, in this most recent start, bullpen's letting him down with inherited runners. That's been something that's happened a lot. All seems to have good strikeout games consistently. So I don't know. It is a thing, but it's also a thing where if the playoffs lasted for 100 games instead of just.
Well, then they wouldn't be the playoffs.
Yeah, they wouldn't be the playoffs. But I also feel like these numbers would be washed out. But
you know,
I get your point.
I was a little surprised that the Blue Jays went with Stroman in the wild card game. I think a lot of people were, just because the Orioles really struggle against lefties, and the Blue Jays could easily. I think they could have gone to Hap, but maybe not. But Liriano, and they're not even using Liriano in the rotation. But I want to talk about Liriano. It's probably not enough, but in his last four starts of the regular season, he went 1-1 with a 1.46 ERA, 6 walks to 26 strikeouts in 24 and two-thirds. He faced the Rays, the Angels, the Yankees, and the Orioles. And he had just, his last start of the season was 6 1/3 scoreless innings with 10 strikeouts against the Orioles, and he didn't get the start of the wild card game. But I don't know. I mean, Liriano had such a bad year. Does he become a sleeper in 2017?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be fair to call him that. He's not really... I was also ranking starting pitchers yesterday and today, and he's not really anywhere close to my top 50, but that would be kind of what makes him a sleeper, is the fact that you could probably get him late. And yeah, it was a notable turnaround after joining the Blue Jays for reasons that I'm not fully aware of yet. If he'd stayed in Pittsburgh, I could explain it better, probably.
Hey, just he's crazy and consistent. But no, I'm sure there is a reason. It's just like, doesn't make any sense. Goes to Toronto, pitches better. Tougher ballpark, tougher league. But yeah, no, four great starts to finish it off. All right, sleeper for Liriano. Finally, about the playoffs, Farrell. What was he doing batting Brock Holt and Travis Shaw second? What is that? I mean, you don't have to keep Ortiz third or Ortiz fourth, Betts three, or whatever the order was. Like, change your batting order. Who made the last out? Travis Shaw made the last out. Like, what? I couldn't believe that. It's just like, those guys should not be hitting second. That's an easy out in between three of the best hitters in baseball. Well, two of the best hitters, and Pedroia's no slouch himself.
Yeah, I don't think that's where they should be hitting, given all the alternatives in that lineup either.
Yeah. You know what really was kind of an X factor for them is Jackie Bradley. I mean, he was awful in the postseason. Kind of a perplexing fantasy player. I'm going to guess if we went to Baseball Reference and did a date range search, it would be pretty ugly for Jackie Bradley in his last however many games.
I'd like to look that up because I don't feel like I came across that when I was ranking outfielders. But
where did you rank him?
He's in the top 30, but near the... No, you know what? He may be in the top... now I don't even remember. I can look it up real quick. I think he's closer to 30 than 20, and I think wrong. I have him 18th.
All right, let's look at the last 2 months. August 1st till the end of the season for Jackie Bradley Jr., 216 batting average, 303 on base, 387 slugging. 9 home runs in 2 months. With 23 walks to 64 strikeouts.
That's bad 2 months.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. He's a little streaky. That Jay Brad.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, what do you think? Back outside the top 20?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. The two I have behind him are Adam Jones and Mark Trumbo. You want Jackie Bradley more? It's pretty close.
Yeah.
I mean. I don't want him significantly less.
I think I have to come around on Trumbo. I mean, his power is so legit. He didn't really do anything unusual this year, right?
He hit .216 in the second half.
But with a lot of power.
With a lot of power, yeah.
Yeah, probably go Trumbo.
Okay.
Scott, let's do rounds 1 and 2, and then we'll read some listener emails. Round 1. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Josh Donaldson, your top 4. They're great. And then Goldschmidt. And Goldschmidt was the number 6 hitter in points leagues, number 7 in Roto. He led all first basemen in steals with 32, except Hernan Perez had 2 more, I believe. Interesting year for Goldschmidt. He only slugged .489. He hit 24 home runs, 33 doubles, 95 RBIs, and still managed to be a top 7 hitter because of the steals and all the walks, which helped him in points leagues. So Goldschmidt at 5. You know, I don't know. Maybe Arenado I can make the case for behind him. It's at number 6, just a lot more home runs, but you don't get the steals. I don't know.
Yeah.
I got no beef with your top 5, and 6 is Arenado. I got no beef with your top 6.
Yeah, I think the top 6 is pretty easy. I mean, we could quibble about the order of any of them. Even, you know, like Betts, Altuve, Donaldson, that trio, you could easily invert them. I think the issue for Goldschmidt is, I mean, he's 28 years old, and he has pretty well established himself as a 30-homer guy before this year. So I think there's more there's upside to improve on his 2016 numbers that maybe Arenado doesn't have. Not that Arenado needs to improve on them. Of course, they were great. But, I mean, Goldschmidt underachieved and was still the sixth best hitter in one format and the seventh best in another.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stats, actually, from this season is that Goldschmidt was the better base stealer than Jose Altuve. And with one more home run, I could have said Jose Altuve was the better home run hitter than Goldschmidt. That would have been hilarious if it actually happened.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
But it was pretty close. They tied in home runs.
That would have been a heck of a bold prediction.
Yeah.
I think you could even quibble about Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, number one and two. You know, I'd take Trout. But Betts, I would say, is more reliable for steals.
Yeah, I guess.
They're both so good.
Yeah. Well, and Betts was better than Trout in both formats this year.
Yeah, they were. Betts was one, Trout was two in both points and roto.
Yeah. By a little, but I feel like, you know, obviously we had the Harper Trout debate last year, and I think there was a clearer case for Harper over Trout than there is now for Betts over Trout, and look how that argument turned out. And it's nothing against Betts. It's just there's nothing, you have no reason to worry about anything with Trout. He's worry free. He may not end up being the number one hitter next year. He may only be fourth or fifth, but you know he's going to be awesome. And you can't go wrong with him as your first pick.
Yeah. So, all right. So let me recap the top six. Kind of lost my train of thought there. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Josh Donaldson, Paul Goldschmidt, and Nolan Arenado. Man, I had something to say that was just brilliant. And I don't remember it.
You were looking at the lawn guys outside blowing leaves around, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's very distracting.
Kind of. You ever see American Beauty?
Yeah.
Things just blowing in the wind. Just my mind was just scattered because I was thinking about Kevin Spacey. Chris Bryant is number seven. He was the number seven hitter in points, number five in roto. Manny Machado is number eight. I'm going to stop you there.
All right, let's stop.
Is this because of shortstop eligibility?
Partly.
He didn't quite measure up with the other guy. Great hitter, but he was actually the number 18 hitter in points, number 22 in roto, Manny Machado. So he did not come close to measuring up to the seven guys ahead of him. And for that matter, number nine, Anthony Rizzo, really didn't either. Much better in points than roto. Number 13 hitter in points, number 27 in roto. So is this where there's a big drop-off in talent from Bryant, number seven, to 8-9, Manny Machado, Anthony Rizzo?
I don't think it's the biggest drop-off in the first round. There is a little bit of a drop-off. I think when you get into comparing whether a guy was 18th or 8th, like I have him ranked, I would guess there's not that much separation between within that whole group of hitters. And you're also assessing reliability here. I mean, Manny Machado was a first rounder coming into this year. And, you know, maybe he didn't quite live up to that. But if you drafted, if he was your first round pick, he wasn't the reason you lost either. It's not like he busted this year. He didn't do anything to deserve to fall out of the first round.
No, the big difference is just the steals.
Yeah, he didn't steal as many bases.
He didn't steal any.
And he may never steal that many bases again.
He stole 20 in 2015 and zero last year. I mean, that was really hard to predict. I think the fact that he was hitting third most of the year, I'm guessing that contributed to it. But
yeah.
if those steals had been there, I think he would have been. I mean, I could do it right now. Let's add 40 points to Manny Machado and give him 570 points. That would have made him the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th hitter in baseball, right behind Edwin Encarnacion. Of course, that doesn't take into account any caught stealings. So he'd be a little bit down, but he'd be closer to 12 than 20. But other than that, I mean, the season looks pretty similar to last year.
Yeah.
I got no problem with Machado in the first round, but he's the only shortstop eligible player you have in round one, right?
No, he's not, actually. He's not. We'll get to the other. But, okay, so let's talk about...
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about pick 12. Yeah.
I mean, some of the players who finished between Bryant and Machado in actual production, I'm opening up points leagues because production is clearer in that format than Roto. If you want to look at Roto, that's fine. I'm sure it's similar. David Ortiz, retiring, obviously. Brian Dozier, you're not taking him over Machado. Votto, Encarnacion, Miggy. Maybe you could talk about it, but I think Machado, with his youth and his superior eligibility, I think that makes it a pretty easy call going with him over them. Robinson Cano, I mean, you're clearly taking Machado over him. Freddie Freeman, Gene Segura. And then you're about to Manny Machado. So that's the caliber of player who technically finished ahead of Machado, but you just feel more confident drafting Machado, steals or no steals, right? I know I do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think maybe if you're going into next year and you're saying, well, is he going to steal bases? Maybe you look at where he's hitting in the order. I don't think he's going to lead off. He led off in 111 games in 2015, and Machado stole 12 of his 20 bases in those 111 games, and he played most of the year batting third last year. And maybe that was the difference. So I guess I'm not going to count on him at all for steals next year.
I wouldn't.
Rizzo is interesting just because this day and age, you know, hitting 31, 32 home runs is good but not exceptional. And that's what he's done three straight years. One of them was in like 140 games. So maybe he's got more power potential. But is he a points league specialist, Anthony Rizzo? It's a ton of walks and 43 doubles. Is this going to be his, you know, a career high in doubles for him? Or does he profile to be, I wouldn't say a specialist. It's not like he was bad in Roto.
Right.
But like I said, Rizzo was the number 13 hitter in points leagues, number 27 in Roto.
I could understand that argument. I think what sets him apart from the Freddie Freeman, Freddie Freeman types, or, you know, I'm even putting him ahead of Miguel Cabrera, Edwin Encarnacion, Joey Votto. I guess what sets him apart from those three is youth. What sets him apart from Freddie Freeman's is strikeouts, which, is, of course, counts for something directly in points leagues and doesn't in Roto, but it counts for something indirectly. I mean, if you strike out 171 times like Freddie Freeman did, I don't know that you can count on a .302 batting average every year. When Rizzo, I feel like, has shown he's a safe source of batting average, safe source of power, safe source of everything given the lineup he's batting in the middle of. It's kind of a Fred McGriff pick, I guess, in that you'd never, like, he's just always among the best hitters. Even if you don't feel like he's going to break through and have that MVP caliber season,
very,
and he's still young enough that he could. And I don't. The home runs kind of dried up on him in the second half in an odd way that I don't know what to make of that. But you know, if we're just assessing him on the full season numbers, I don't think you really go wrong with him even in the first round.
And if you're playing in an OBP Roto league, it's much different because Rizzo's had an on-base percentage of .386, .387, and .385 the last three seasons. He's been very, very steady. His walk to strikeout ratio has been almost exactly the same three straight seasons. He hits 38-ish doubles. He had 43 last year. He scored 94 runs 2 years in a row. Basically had the same exact year as he had 2015 and 16.
Yeah.
The batting average was a little bit better this year, .278 in 2015, .292 in 2016. But the steals went away. So 17 steals in 2015, only three last year.
And I think they were pretty front-loaded in 2015. I think he had like 9 in of the 17 in April.
Okay.
So that was kind of expected. If he had sustained his power growth from the first couple months all season, then I don't think there'd be any question he's a first-round pick. And
well,
again, it's a security thing.
Based on your first and second rounds, if assuming this holds true, and it won't, it'll change, but man, I really want a top 9 pick because it gets a lot. I think so anyway. It gets a lot different after that.
Well, that's what I meant when you said the drop off from Brian to Machado. I don't think that's the biggest drop off in the first round. I think we're about to see it
now that I'm reevaluating. Sure. All right. So Trout, Betts, Altuve, Donaldson, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Bryant, Machado, Anthony Rizzo 9, Bryce Harper, Clayton Kershaw, Corey Seager.
Yeah.
Harper 10, Kershaw 11, Seager 12. I think personally, huge difference in the rankings. I would take Kershaw over Harper. Harper 10, Kershaw 11, Corey Seager 12. All right, go ahead, Scott. Discuss.
Well, there are some people emphatically arguing for me to move Harper up. Like,
up.
10 is, yeah, way too low. He's obviously going to have a bounce back season. I think there's a very good chance he had a bounce back season. Whether or not you want to believe Tom Verducci or the Nationals organization, seems like he was dealing with shoulder neck issues all year that affected his performance, and that seems like as good of an explanation as we're going to hear.
If you're going to take Harper earlier than, say, a Machado or a Bryant or something like that, then I feel like you have to take Giancarlo Stanton in the second round.
Yeah. No.
Right?
They're yeah, very no.
I mean, Harper's a better player, but yeah, they both have shown when they're healthy that they're awesome, that they're first-round talent, and you don't have Stanton, spoiler alert, in your second round.
Well, I will make one distinction, because when Stanton was healthy this year, he did not show that.
Yeah, I don't really... Look, some people are going to be bothered by that. I don't know that I have a great reason for it, but I'm just going to say I don't really care about his struggles this year. I just,
okay.
I think it was a total fluke, and I think he'll be fine. It was Bonds' fault.
I can't really justify Harper any lower than 10th, I don't feel like, knowing the upside and knowing the fact, I mean, I know a lot of it was front-loaded. He had a huge April, but he was still, what, a top 15 outfielder this year, even for as bad as it was.
Like I'd be surprised if that were the case in rotisserie leagues, but I can check for you.
Yeah, 10th in points leagues.
Yeah, 10th in points.
So, you know, I don't think you can, given that the next hitter is Corey Seager, who's probably the biggest question mark here, I don't think I could go any lower than 10th on Harper. Kershaw, I actually moved up from 12th to 11th based on the way he performed in September. Maybe I could go that one spot higher over Harper, but that's it. Because Seager, there's a bit of projection factoring in here on a per-game basis, and sorry, I'm using points again. Per-game basis, Seager was actually worse than Aledmys Diaz.
He was the number five shortstop last year. He doesn't feel like a first-rounder to me. I was surprised by this one.
Well, oddly low RBI total. He had 72 RBI.
Okay.
Batting second mostly for a playoff-caliber lineup. That just seems, first of all, it seems likely he'll be moved back even to third next year. But even if he stays second, it seems like that RBI total is going to correct itself. And the 40 homers, 26, 40 doubles, 26 homers, 308 batting average for a 22-year-old shortstop.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm willing to project a little, especially since, you know, we've run out of what are clearly first-round caliber hitters.
Well, I don't know that we have. We've run out of non-first basemen. But I think you could argue that Encarnacion and Votto and Cabrera might just be better hitters than Seager. Especially Encarnacion. Guy's unbelievable.
Okay. You could argue that.
I don't know that especially any of them, actually.
They're all on the wrong side of 30. You said Votto, too, right? Encarnacion,
yeah, they're
Votto,
all, yeah,
Miguel
they're all
Cabrera.
Older, sure.
They're all on the wrong side of 30. I think the way Votto's last two seasons have started out has to give you some pause, even drafting him in the second round, because, I mean, it might be tough to... You might put yourself in a hole, or he might put you in a hole early if he follows the same pattern. And it seems to be, you know, based on some of the things we've read about him and his approach to hitting during a season, it seems to be kind of deliberate, the slow start. So, I don't know. I think the raw numbers would suggest maybe Votto should go in the first round. They suggest maybe Miguel Cabrera should go in the first round. But I'm, especially since first base is looking like it'll be pretty deep next year, I'm happy to let them fall to the second and go ahead and lock up Seager, who I think is already great and takes a big step forward next year.
Here's my one issue with Seager. He plays a position that has a lot of steals, and he doesn't steal bases, which I think might hold him back in shortstop rankings. But also, if you're in a roto league and you're just thinking, oh, I'm going to get some steals late, you know, you can't really take a shortstop. I guess you could as a middle infielder. But shortstop is kind of a position you could wait a little bit later on and take a, you know, and not draft a shortstop early, take one later and get your steals. So that, I don't know. I don't know if
to a degree. I mean, there's only so many players who are going to give you 30 plus steals. You know, unless you're going to invest a late pick in Rajay Davis or Jared Dyson, which obviously doesn't even apply to your shortstop argument.
Right. No, but you could get 20 steals.
Yeah, you could maybe get 20 steals.
From Elvis Andrews, from Jose Ramirez, from Ian Desmond, guys like that.
Eduardo Nunez is going to be the one player who I think you'd worry about blocking yourself out of steals, who has a chance of delivering a significant enough number that you'd worry about that. And I'm just not sure. I'm not sure you can plan that far ahead for that one player.
Did we talk about this? I can't remember. And I feel like not only can I not remember if we've talked about this, I can't remember if I have asked you if we have talked about this before. Because I keep thinking, I should bring this up, and I keep forgetting. 25-25 season's pretty good, right? That's a must-start fantasy player.
Sure.
Unless he's hitting like 150. That is one...
150.
That is one home run and one steal per week. Doesn't that just blow your mind? I mean, if you looked at somebody's stat line every week after your scoring period was over and he had one home run and one steal, it wouldn't stand out to you. If he did that every week, he's 25-25. He's 26-26 to be exact.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Especially when guys have like three homer games. That means they might go 2 weeks without hitting a home run.
Yeah, it happens all the time, and it's something we try to remind people in the moment during the season. But that's what makes... I think baseball playoffs, getting back to our original conversation, so hard to predict is because, you know, like your Josh Tomlin at Fenway Park example. I mean, I feel like it's the sport where
champions are made.
Each individual game has the widest range of outcomes. Each individual player performance in each individual game has almost an infinite number of possible outcomes. You compare that to something like basketball, and that, you know, basketball players pretty much do the same thing every night.
Yeah. I used to love basketball. I can't do it. I watch it, but man, it used to be such a better sport. Let me tell you something, Scott. Sporting events are too long. Too damn long.
The events themselves?
Games. Yeah. Yeah. Just way too long. Basketball games used to be a tidy 2.5 hours every time. There's like no chance of that anymore. And I'm not talking about actual game time, like start of the broadcast to the end of the broadcast. It was a 7 o'clock game. Thing was over at 9:30. Now it's just 9:45, 10 o'clock, because they review everything, and there's a million timeouts. Baseball's got its own problems. These commercial breaks during the playoffs are unbearable. I went to the Hurricanes game on Saturday night. That thing started at 8:15, ended about midnight. Just, we don't have time for this, Scott. We're busy people.
Got to speed up the game.
It's not fair
pitch
what
clocks.
They're doing. They sell more
limit
ads.
The pitching changes.
They sell more ads, and then they try to fix the game. Like, stop selling commercials. How much damn money do you need? How much money do you need?
Well, I mean, how often do you watch sports on delay, DVR?
It's more like I can't watch the start of the game, so I'll DVR it. It's not like I'm going to watch 4 hours later. That happens sometimes.
Football, I've taken to especially doing it.
Really?
Yeah, watching it on delay. And it works out great because obviously you skip the commercials. I go double speed between every play and just hit play right before the snap every time.
Yeah,
I get through a football game in an hour. It's awesome.
Good. Yeah, no, it's good. I do that with baseball too.
Yeah?
Yeah, in between pitches.
Yeah.
Not double, just one speed. Not just one fast forward.
Well, that's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got to recap round one. Trout, Betts, Altuve, Donaldson, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Bryant, Machado, Rizzo, Harper, Kershaw, Seager. Round two. Charlie Blackman. You know that one? I'm the Scat Man.
I thought you were going Spaceballs song.
No.
Not going to lie.
Spaceballs song.
Because what you got is what we need, and all we do is dirty deeds
Charlie
with the Spaceballs.
Yes. I want that to be my song when I walk down the aisle at my wedding.
I don't think that's going to happen.
She's not going to let that
happen. I don't think that's going to happen.
I freaking love that song. Or at least when like some of the wedding party comes in. Like my friends who love Spaceballs, like the Spaceballs song, that'd be great. Charlie Blackman's one. This was another one that surprised me.
Is that the most referenced movie on our podcast, Spaceballs?
I think it's the most quotable movie of all time.
Wow, that is... Yeah. That is a bold claim.
That's what I think. Most quotable movie of all time. I can't think of it. Like Airplane, maybe? What else? Godfather?
I find myself quoting Jurassic Park a lot. I don't know if
weird.
That makes me weird.
I don't think I would get any of your references.
All right.
Yeah. So Blackman, 13. Miguel Cabrera, 14.
What about Forrest Gump?
That's pretty quoted. Can we just keep it with comedies? Spaceballs, the most quoted comedy.
Comedy.
Yeah, most quotable.
I'll keep thinking.
All right.
What about like Airplane?
Yeah, I think that would be probably what
I've
most
never seen
would say.
Airplane.
Really?
Yeah, but I know a lot of references to it.
I wonder if you'd like it. I would need you to see it because I just don't know. Spaceballs, if you showed it to someone who'd never seen it before, I don't think they'd like it.
The humor's just dated, you
think? Yeah, it's a little dated. Because I did that in high school with my buddy. He had never seen it, and he didn't like it.
Airplane
is pretty damn funny.
I think high school is probably the worst age for Spaceball. I think it's pretty sophomoric humor.
It is.
And you kind of go through a period in high school where you're like above most things, you feel like.
Mm.
You didn't go through that?
That was maybe college for me. I was late to be pretentious. All right, so Blackman, 13, huh? He's a. We don't have a lot of outfielders here, do we?
No, we don't.
And so Blackman
and,
is after Harper. So it's Trout, Betts, and then Harper and Blackman. Oh, Bryant's outfield eligible too.
I think you could make because you mentioned Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto, Edwin Encarnacion as potential first rounders over Corey Seager. I feel like Charlie Blackman's actually the better argument if you want to make one. He doesn't have the age issue holding him back. His per game production was 3.79 points per game, which, to give you a comparison, better than Chris Bryant. Obviously, Blackman missed some time with
the
injury.
The batting average, though. I mean, this was such a career year for him.
Except in stolen bases. He traded off some steals for power.
And
home away splits were basically even. This was not a Coors Field thing for Charlie Blackman.
All right, so Blackman, just to give the stats, 2014 and 2015, he batted .288 and .287 with 19 and 17 home runs, 28 and 43 steals. 2016, he batted .324 with 29 home runs and only 17 steals. So 10 more home runs than his previous career high, and the .324 batting average after batting .288 and .287 in 2014 and 15 was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You think it's legit?
What I think makes it a lot more believable, again, like I was saying, was the home-away splits, because he was doing it. And maybe that actually, you know, I'd have to go look through year by year. That might actually explain the difference.
Could be.
He may have been just as good as always at home, but he was able to transition it to the road now. And yeah, that's the way it's looking. He was like a .330 hitter at home prior to this year, and started doing it on the road too. So I think there's something to that.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what would cause that to happen, what would make him suddenly able to carry it over on the road, but it lasted all season. And I don't know. I don't have a good enough argument against it to really doubt it, especially since, I mean, he was already a high-end player coming into the year. This is just like moving him up from third round to second, you know?
It just feels so early. 13 overall for Charlie Blackman.
Outfield stinks, too. Who's your next outfielder?
I can't think of it. I keep thinking of George Springer, but he didn't even have that good of a year.
He was one of those I referred to who was in my initial top 24 who I didn't feel comfortable with and was able to bump him. Next outfielder who we're going to get to, should I spoil it or should we wait? There is another outfielder in my second
round. All right, we can wait.
Okay.
We can wait. But I do think that Nelson Cruz deserves a little bit of credit for what he's done. And Ryan Braun as well. I mean, I know Cruz is old, but if Cruz were like 30 and doing what he's been doing, he's probably a second-round pick this year.
Yes.
You know? All right.
You're probably right.
All right, so then we have Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto, Max Scherzer, Edwin Encarnacion. As we look at 13 through 17, we got three first basemen. It's Blackman, 13, Cabrera, 14, Votto, 15, Scherzer, 16, Encarnacion, 17. Talk about that group.
So first five picks of the second round is what we're looking at, and you look at Miguel Cabrera's numbers, I think it's the clearest example of just how much better the hitting environment was this year compared to past years, because this was like it looked like he was an MVP caliber player again, just looking at the raw numbers, and yet he didn't quite measure up even at his own position. So I basically have him ranked about where he finished at the position.
And he hit .316 with 38 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that was coming off two injury-plagued years. So I do think he deserves to be downgraded a little because of age. That's why he's in my second round instead of my first round. Votto, I mentioned his issues too. Encarnacion, the strikeouts were up for him. It's a good chance he's leaving Toronto. There are some reasons to be – there are some variables there make it so I don't want to assess his numbers just at face value. And obviously he has the age factor as well. But it was hard to distinguish between these three, Cabrera, Votto, and Encarnacion. The reason I wedged Scherzer in there, who in my mind is the obvious number two pitcher behind Kershaw, reason I was able to wedge him in there is because if I had gone three straight first basemen, then suddenly the Rizzo owner is drafting a first baseman in the second round.
So that
was my excuse to break them up.
Looking at Encarnacion's home road splits, pretty noticeable. The power was basically the same, but the batting average was about 40 points lower on the road. But in 2015, it really wasn't that. They basically had very, very similar home road splits. 2014... Same thing. A lot worse on the road.
Yeah, if he winds up in a place like San Francisco, not that I don't see how that would happen, but you know, just hypothetically, he goes to Oakland, whatever. That's what would concern me the most. But I think any time you have a change in environment for a player, especially one who really found himself in the Toronto environment, it's something that'll make you a little uneasy.
And then let's go to the next four picks after Encarnacion. Carlos Correa, 18. Madison Bumgarner, 19. Daniel Murphy, 20. Trey Turner, there's your outfielder.
Yep.
21. So Correa, Bumgarner, Daniel Murphy, Trey Turner. Daniel Murphy, wow. Middle of the second round. Wow. This is a pretty interesting group. I kind of feel like Correa will be better than Seager.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I initially had them, Seager, I had them back-to-back, basically. Not so that the same team ended up with them, but, you know, so there may have been one player in between the two of them. And I decided to move Correa down with this second version of the first two rounds that I'm releasing here and now. And part of it's because there was that big of a difference just in his and Seager's 2016 performance. I do think the upside is similar, but I think it's harder for me to pass up on these other players for Correa than Seager, if only because I think Seager's a much safer source of batting average than Correa.
Okay. Murphy, Trey Turner, back-to-back, couple of gnats there. Mm-hmm. And you think they're pretty legit, I guess.
Yeah, I do. Murphy, I think, is more... It's clearer he's legit because he strikes out so rarely. I mean, the batting average, he's going to be a great source of that. And we talked all year about the changes he made to become more of a power hitter, which actually started last September. So
I know, but don't you just...
It carried
like,
over from one season to the next.
I guess. And look, there's you know, you could look at like Jose Bautista, where it kind of came out of nowhere and he
Josh
kept
Donaldson.
It up. Josh Donaldson. It just feels like this guy...
Encarnacion.
This guy was so pedestrian for his entire career. Yeah. I just feel like this is a
"fool you"
moment.
That's what we were all saying after the postseason, right? Last year's postseason. And we were the ones who were...
We had eggs on our face.
We had eggs all over our face. And I don't want to have egg on my face again over Daniel Murphy. I think he's fine. I think age is the biggest concern with him.
So I guess I would just probably prefer the pitchers that you have going after those two.
Well, should we talk about Turner first?
Sure, but you have Daniel Murphy, Trey Turner, Chris Sale, Corey Kluber, and then you finish it off with Brian Dozier, 24.
Yeah.
I guess I just have enough doubts about those guys. Turner's actually, he's amazing, so maybe not, but that I probably might, I might take the safe route and just go with the pitchers there.
Well, I mean, Turner's the bigger, the one who has me scratching my head more than Murphy, because I mean, he can't be as good as he was, right? He was the best hitter in fantasy after he came up, right? Better than Trout, better than all of those guys, and he can't be that good, right? He doesn't walk much, which is a little concerning. Strikeout rate's not terrible, but strikeout to walk is not looking good. So how high of a batting average is he going to deliver? I mean, it's not going to be 350. Is it going to be 320, 290, 270? It makes a big difference. We know he can run. We know he's going to run a lot. I think his power potential is decent, you know, a little better than Francisco Lindor's, let's say. So I think he can afford to hit 280, 290 and still perform like a second rounder. So there, I'm factoring in a certain amount of regression here, but it's kind of just a guessing game what he's going to regress to with so little to work off of. It helps that, of course, outfield has this chasm after Charlie Blackmon that he can so conveniently fill. I do have George Springer as the outfielder following him, by the way, though not till the third round. He's also eligible at second base if you wanted to draft him there instead. I don't think I would, but the versatility is nice.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? And like I said, Kluber, Sale, and Dozier round out the top 24. All that offense last year, there aren't more than, I don't know, 15 hitters that I really feel like deserve to be in the first or second round. Well, I don't know if you feel the same way.
That kind of goes along with some of what I've read. I mean, home runs were way up, but it was kind of the rest of the league closing the gap on the elite. It wasn't a bunch of guys hitting 50 home runs like we saw back in the 2000s when you know, the, some of these numbers are being compared to them. It was a lot of guys hitting 20 home runs, a lot of Gene Segura, Aledmys Diaz types springing up.
Right,
and,
it was like 43%
unexpected power.
Well, we had that stat in the last show, 43% with a certain amount of at-bats hit 20 home runs.
Yeah, so I hear you. I think in the hitters that you can say without question deserve to be first or second rounders ends with Encarnacion, who was my fifth pick in the second round. And yeah, I mean, I guess you could debate even Corey Seager.
Correa, I think Correa, I'd be willing to, like you said, it takes some projection.
It definitely takes projection.
Sort of Seager, I feel like pretty comfortable with Correa. I just think he's a special talent.
Yeah,
and he wasn't great by any means. Was it bad? He didn't have a bad year.
Well, just to put, he didn't have a bad year. Shortstop, as a whole, had a pretty good year, and I expect it to be not as good next year. But that's a different discussion for a different day. In terms of head-to-head points per game, and again, I use that as the measurement, not because I'm disregarding rotisserie, but because it provides a clearer standard for measurement than rotisserie. Head-to-head points per game, these were the shortstop-eligible players who finished ahead of Seager first. Gene Segura, Trevor Story, Manny Machado, Jonathan Villar, Xander Bogaerts, Aledmys Diaz, Jose Reyes, Alex Bregman.
Wow.
So that's Seager, my first rounder. Then you have Seager. Then here's the additional list that finished ahead of Correa. Jose Ramirez, Eduardo Nunez, Francisco Lindor, Ian Desmond, and then you get to Correa. Some of those guys who I named won't even be eligible at shortstop next year, so that narrows it down a little. Off the top of my head, that would be Reyes, Bregman, Jose Ramirez, and Ian Desmond. So that shrinks the list from, there were 15 ahead of Correa, that shrinks it to 11. But very close group. So when we say we're factoring in some projection, it's, we expect most of those other guys to either stand still or take a step back, while Correa and Seager seem like they'll take a step forward.
Well, I'll tell you who I really want in the third round based on your first two rounds. I want Stanton. I think he could be a total steal.
In the third round?
Yeah.
The only problem, I don't have him ranked that high.
The only problem with that is that I have pretty much... No, I wouldn't say that. I typically like to go hitter. And I usually... I need to have at least one pitcher I think going into next year, I'll need to have at least one pitcher with my first three picks.
I think so.
So that would make it hard for me to take Stanton.
With so many questionables at start, starting pitcher is such an aggravating position to rank. there's so big, big question marks beginning around 13 at the position. And you really, I'm not going to feel comfortable unless I have somebody who I know I can rely on. Which is actually part of the reason why Sale and Kluber made it into the back end of the second round here. Because I think the top five at starting pitcher, even before you talk about that, the question marks at 13, the top five being Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale and Kluber, we heard them all here. I think that is a clear-cut group, and then there's question marks even after that. My sixth starting pitcher is Justin Verlander, who, you know, probably half the people listening wouldn't have been caught dead drafting coming into this year. There were so many concerns about him, and now he's number six for me, which is deserved, I think, coming off the year he just had. I think second half he had a 189 ERA, and that was at about seven innings at a time. But that just kind of shows you, you know, you have like Noah Syndergaard in that range, who I think has durability concerns. And
you got a Price close to there, right?
Price is 12th for me.
Okay.
Yeah. So in that same range. And
Cueto?
Cueto.
Bumgarner's in your top five, never mind.
You know what? I think it's Cueto who's 12th. I think Price is like 10th.
Okay.
I think you're right.
All right.
So, yeah, some question marks there.
Let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Please put baseball podcast in the subject line. This is from Bill, and he says, Dear Bill, Ted, and Socrates.
That is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure,
it
right?
Is, yeah. Yeah. I recently suggested that during the off season you have a segment or a show called Manager of the Year, where listeners could submit their resume / arguments as to why they deserve that title. May I be so humble as to offer my own season as a contestant?
Oh, yes, this is going to be a pleasure.
To begin with, I am not one to engage in braggadocio.
Oh.
I don't think that's true.
Word of the year.
Indeed, this is the first season I have won after playing for more than a decade. While the cash winnings were nice, I was far more gratified in winning the pride associated with my league and its championship. However, the way this was accomplished is one for the history books. Our league enables the trading of future draft picks, and through a few high-stakes trades, three super teams had been created a week before the trade deadline. Feeling left out in the cold, I became a seller. On the final day before the trade deadline, when I was out of the playoff picture and looking in, I traded it all away. So I traded on July 1st. Steven Strasburg, Kenley Jansen, Andrew Miller, and Wilson Ramos. In exchange, I received a 2017 first-round draft pick. After that trade, Andrew Miller was cast away to bullpen oblivion in Cleveland. Strasburg showed his true colors, and even Ramos.
Or he got hurt.
Yeah. And even Ramos collapsed down the stretch. However, after that trade, I had incredible roster flexibility on the backs of Gary Sanchez, Jonathan Villar, Trey Turner, and Justin Upton. I became the hottest team in the league and snuck into the playoffs. The story doesn't end there, though. While my trade partner missed the playoffs, I now found myself face-to-face with the three super teams that I sought to avoid. In the quarterfinals, I faced a team that included Abreu, Machado, Cano, Donaldson, Bautista, Stanton, Hamels, Price, and Bumgarner. Holy cow. It was arguably the best 2 weeks of my fantasy career, and I eked out a narrow win. The semifinals was no easier. I went up against a comparable super team with Bryant, Arenado, Kyle Seager, Chris Davis, and Max Scherzer. The finals had me squaring away against Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, and on and on. The moral of the story is that in head-to-head leagues, anything can happen, and you shouldn't count your season out over until it's truly over. I was able to ride some hot bats in the playoffs and find pitcher-friendly matchups for my streaming. I listened to you guys. I tweeted Al on occasion. I was able to go head-to-head against the very best. And not only did I win, but I also go into 2017 with the following keepers.
Yeah.
VR, Turner, JD Martinez, AJ Pollock, Thor, and two first-round picks. Manager of the year.
It's hard to come up with a better scenario than that, because, yeah, you're in a great position for next season, even having just won the championship. It would be like if the Cubs won this season.
Yeah. JD Martinez, by the way, could be, what do you think, second round?
JD Martinez?
Yeah.
He is going to be more like a third or fourth rounder, I think, based on my rankings. But I don't think there's a big gap really between him and Springer, who just missed my second round. Just an upside thing.
What about AJ Pollock?
Yeah, he's in that mix too. I think I actually have him one spot ahead of Martinez.
All right, this email is from Martin.
By the way, since he did Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you know the executive producer of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Of course. Jimmy's.
Scott White.
Really?
It's the first name that shows up in the credits. My claim to fame.
That's pretty cool, man.
Different Scott White.
Yeah, I don't have any Adam Azer
stories. Yeah, not as many of those.
Okay, this is from Martin. Dear Yasiel, Michael, and Robbie. Why am I struggling with this? I mean, obviously Yasiel, but...
There's only one Yasiel, right?
As far as I know. Mm. Okay. As Ron Chandler would advise, never draft an enigma. Is that what he advises? Oh, these are enigmas. Puig, Pineda, and Robbie Ray.
Ah.
All right. It's been a wacky year in fantasy. How do I look at pitchers for next year? I plan a head-to-head points league. Ace pitchers are pretty valuable, but is Verlander worth keeping going into his age 34 season? Is Chris Archer worth keeping after doubling down on his slider usage? So he's got a keeper question, basically. But it looks like he's keeping Rizzo, Correa, Machado, Bregman, and Gary Sanchez. And then he can keep either Sale, and he's going to keep Sale. He can either keep Verlander and Archer or Carpenter and Dahl. So would you load up on the starting pitchers or prefer a Carpenter and Dahl to Verlander and Archer?
I would keep Verlander and
Carpenter.
I don't know that I would keep Carpenter. Does he give the format?
Head-to-head points.
Yeah, okay. Verlander and Carpenter. Stinks to throw Dahl back, because I think he's going to be a nice long-term keeper for somebody, but I feel like Verlander and Carpenter are too high-end, particularly given the format.
Addison from Atlanta, I can't decide who to keep. Head-to-head 5x5 categories league on base percentage instead of batting average. Please pick two. Manny Machado in the 16th round, Carlos Correa in the 16th round, Gary Sanchez in the 18th round, Trey Turner, 18th round. Yu Darvish, 18th round. So Machado, Oof. Correa, Gary Sanchez, Trey Turner, Yu Darvish. Pick two, OBP League.
I'm going to go Machado and Turner, actually, even over Correa, even though it's just a two-round difference, and I actually have Correa higher in the second round we just named. I don't have him higher by much, and I feel like if either one is going to explode and become a top four player next year, I feel like Turner's chances are better.
From Steve, 12-team keeper league with five keepers. He's definitely keeping Betts, Donaldson, and Charlie Blackmon. Now pick two more. Story, Odor, Polanco. Story, Odor, Polanco. Pick two.
I'm going to pick Odor and Story.
Okay. And Mike in New York City, my last keeper slot in a 10-team points league is between a $1 Addison Russell and a $21 Carlos Carrasco. Aces and near aces go for between $30 and $50, so that's why Carrasco is appealing at $21. I like Russell to have incremental growth, but how do you weigh value and cost versus a higher-end player? So you got a $1 Addison Russell and a $21 Carlos Carrasco here.
I think in a 10-team league, it's shallow enough that you don't have to sell out for the long term. There's so much roster turnover and so many cheap players that are going to emerge in the years to come that even if Addison Russell, two or three years down the line becomes a stud, which is not guaranteed, you'll be on to other things at that point. So I think keeping Carrasco is the best choice here at 21. In a deeper league, in a dynasty league, might be different. But
okay.
I like Carrasco here more.
I enjoyed singing the Spaceballs theme song with you.
Yeah. I enjoyed it too.
That was very fun. Yeah,
yeah. We should sing it more often.
I agree. We look like we are in a group. You know, we're wearing the same shirt, singing the same song. Very strange.
We're a couple strange guys.
Yeah. That's it for today's show. We're coming back next week with another Fantasy Baseball Today episode. For Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Have a great weekend, everybody. Talk to you next week. Machado.